I'm John Wedger. I'm a retired Metropolitan Police detective who specialised in child abuse investigations. My main sort of reason for coming to prominence was my role as a whistleblower, in which I stood up and spoke out about the Met Police's deliberate cover-up of child abuse, child prostitution, child trafficking, and many other forms of crimes against children. And in doing so, I was threatened and bullied into silence, and told to never disclose the information I had. I spoke out about it. I then endured a 4-year campaign of bullying in which the police threatened me with the loss of my home, my job, and my children if I didn't shut up and back down. Anyway, I continued, and as a result, I sort of got known to the national media. And I then started my own campaigning in which I teamed up with various survivors of historic and institutional child abuse. And I now sort of campaign for the rights of said victims. And we are seeing now really the second major national inquiry into child abuse matters. This one really relates to specifically grooming gangs, which was covered under the recent IICSA, the Independent Investigations of Child Sexual Abuse, in which I was one of the national core participants. And I actually submitted the largest statement in respect to all the participants in that. And as a result of my evidence, the 5 new points of law in respect to child safeguarding have come out. I've also now, as of Monday, been asked to once again act as a participant in this inquiry. So I'm just waiting further instructions. But my main gripe with this is that an inquiry is strictly that. It just inquires. It doesn't investigate. And we've seen many inquiries. We saw the ICSA one more recently. Did anyone get nicked? No, they didn't, because it's an inquiry, not an investigation. It takes ownership of people's testimonies, and it highlights the wrongdoing. But it really then gets put to bed, and we don't hear anything after that. We had just before that with the Diana inquiry, which looked into the death of Lady Diana. And I think if you believe that it was just a car crash, you may have something loose in your head, because even Diana herself mentioned that, my husband's trying to have me killed in a car crash, which is sort of what happened. But with an inquiry, the public gets what the public wants. There's a need for this inquiry. So the government is doing it. But will it make any difference? In my opinion, no. It will highlight stuff that people like myself, whistleblowers and victims, have been on about for a long time, but no one will get nicked. What we need is a National Crime Agency investigation in which people are arrested, they are brought before a court and hopefully convicted. Not just the people that are doing this to kids directly, the groomers and the child rapists, but also we've got to look at malfeasance in the public office. We've got to look at the police forces that failed to investigate this for whatever reason, whether there's a corruptible relationship with the abusers and themselves, whether they're covering up those higher up in the sort of political food chain, and also local authorities, again, who seem to have been covering things up and for whatever political reason have failed to address the problem. So, but we won't get that, because it's an inquiry, not an investigation.
Now, the person who's in charge of this is Baroness Louise Casey. The previous inquiry was chaired by Alexis J. What do you make of the, is this an improvement? Because there were a lot of criticism of Alexis J was that she really didn't find any prosecutable evidence against police or council workers in the areas where these child prostitution was allowed to carry on. So there was a lot. There was a long, long t trail of evidence. So people had come forward to the police saying, "Will you please do something about this?" and they didn't do it, and neither did the social services, which was, you know, attached to the local authorities. We're talking in many cities here. By the way, of course, including London, this is almost like the idea of the grooming gang is, oh, this is something that happens up in the north, you know. But anyway, I wonder what if you could just say something about the you know, the Alexis J's work, and whether you think Baroness Louise Casey can do any better.
Well, I was one of the people that gave clear evidence of malfeasance in a public office because I was threatened by the head of the vice squad of Scotland Yard, the loss of my home, a job, and my children if I spoke out about what's happening to these kids. I mean, I found once 10 children that were being not only just groomed, but actively prostituted out in 10 minutes. By the end of 3 days, I'd found 52. And this was all brought to the attention of the senior officers who did nothing but attack me for it. So Justice Jay had all this. That there was a reluctance to have me giving live evidence, so they just didn't want me giving live evidence. So they relied on documented evidence. And the morning of the hearing, when my evidence was presented to Justice Jay, it was heavily redacted. They managed to get some of these redactions taken out, but when it was then put back before her, someone from a government department had unpaginated my 52-page statement. So, you know, in respect to pagination, it's like one, two, three, four, you know, consecutive numbers onwards. So the first page of a statement is clear that it's the first page of a statement because it's got the declarations and it's got the opening gambit on it, and the concluding page is just as clear, but in between, you know, one page looks very much like the other. And so if you start putting them out of order and take the pagination off, it's nonsensical. So we then had to fight for 3 days and stayed late each night, basically rewriting the statement and repaginating it. So this is the sort of dirty tricks that the government have done. And you're right, you know, Justice Jay was just a toothless tiger. And even the recommendations that came out of it, and five of them were from my evidence, well, they've not implemented any of them. Now this other one, Casey, I've heard she's a little bit more of a stalwart and, you know, a bit more dogmatic in her approach. But this is what you need. You need proactivity, you know, and a hardened approach when you're dealing with such an abhorrent subject. And like I've always said in my interviews, you know, criminality in respect to police investigations, the majority of it is, you know, conducted by the lower, the working and the underclasses in society, right? And it's usually sort of connected to dysfunctionality and poverty and other socioeconomic issues, right? But crimes against children don't know any boundaries because you're dealing with the damaged emotional self, and that goes for whatever religion, whatever age group, whatever, you know, wealth status this person will have, whatever background, it cares not. You know, so it's way ahead of anyone else when it comes to sort of diversity and political correctness, because abuse against children is done by everyone from every color, every religion, and every social economic background. It knows no boundaries, and that's why it has such a corruptible influence. And they really need to take this on board and manage this properly. So, but you know, statistically, I mean, I worked for the only unit in London that dealt with this problem, child prostitution, and it was called the Juvenile at Risk Team. And it was two of us looking at it for London, which is the biggest city in the Western world and the most diverse city in the world. And the victims came from every single sort of ethnic group going, every religion going. It didn't care a jot about who they were or where they were from. They was a kid, they got abused. And those doing it were just as diverse. So this seems to, from what the inference I'm picking up, it is basically mainly looking at the Kashmiri Pakistani cab drivers in provincial towns within England, you know, but it will be interesting to see, but definitely there's been a cover-up, and the police, the malfeasance is just appalling, and that really needs a criminal investigation into it. But
Well,
it won't
that's right. I
happen.
mean, I think a lot of this seems to come down, John, to the activities of the Crown Prosecution Service as well as the police. So, when often it seems that, I mean, we had our current Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, as a former Chief Crown Prosecutor who failed to prosecute twice. Surrey Police presented him with evidence of the perversions of Jimmy Savile. He didn't think on either occasion there was enough evidence there to go forward with the prosecution. And so there seems to be a bit of a logjam when it comes to the establishment, particularly with the Crown Prosecutor. But look, I actually wanted to say that this is a problem that goes back a long, long way. It's not as if this is anything new, and it's never really been dealt with. It's like this is a boil which is getting bigger and bigger, and someone's got to lance it. I mean, but we have Sir Peter Hayman. Back in the 1960s, he was the deputy head of MI6. He was also a top diplomat, served as High Commissioner for Canada, and he died in 1992. But all the evidence was out there in 1978. He left a package containing paedophile material on a bus, and he was investigated by the police, who found nothing. They found similar, sorry, not they didn't find nothing. They found a hell of a lot, but they didn't actually prosecute the guy. He was never even charged. Geoffrey Dickin, as the MP at the time, raised this in Parliament. I mean, this has been going on for a very long time. This seems
We've
as if there are
also.
some very senior people in the government and appointed at the top of the civil service actually involved. So we're asking the civil service, aren't we, to whether it's through the Home Office or the Foreign Office or whoever, to investigate their own people.
Well, we were the same with Leon Britton. I mean, when I was in police, the name that cropped up more than anyone else's was him. His wife sued every media agency that put that out there, but that was the case. A guy from Scotland Yard's paedophile unit told me about him and said, twice we had him banged to rights, twice. And each time funding was withdrawn, we were told to shut our mouths because he was the fastest ever promoted Home Secretary and then went on to be Secretary of State in Northern Ireland. And then we look at what went on in the Kinkora kids' homes and stuff like that. And we had a guy, I can't remember his name now, but he was a high-ranked officer in military intelligence, and he was on like sort of the unit that sort of dealt with information and misinformation, and he was alarmed at the amount of boys that were being abused and murdered in Kinkora Kids Home, and he sort of raised it to the government and to that sort of standard echelon that Leon Britton was in and everything else, and this guy was banged up for 10 years for a murder he didn't commit. There's a documentary called The Man Who Knew Too Much. I can't remember his name now, but yeah, fascinating insight that he gave into it, into what was going on. And, like I said earlier, my precursor to all this was that it's not like any normal criminality and it needs a very proactive approach. What they should be doing with these ministers, with these senior police officers and councillors and everything like that. When we went to work in this field, we had to be psychometrically tested and vetted, right? Because it was highly, highly stressful and it really had an impact on your mental health. And the psychometric testing would be to really to find out if any of the applicants had themselves come from abuse because they didn't want an abuse survivor investigating it because you would take a not a measured approach to things. And also a propensity maybe to commit other offences and all sorts of bits and pieces, right? So why don't they do that? Why don't they psychometrically test anyone who has to deal with child abuse and then train them properly? So if we had a case of child abuse, we needed an interpreter. We had to get an interpreter that was also vetted and psychometrically tested. If we needed a barrister, we had to have a specific barrister, that had been trained properly. They call it SOET trained and bits and pieces. So why don't they do that with these people? Why would you appoint someone who has a propensity to abuse young boys in a position that is going to adjudicate over those who abuse young
I mean,
boys.
you do have to wonder whether the idea of knowing that someone's a paedophile and allowing them to carry on is somehow of use to the state. That is to say, to the Home Office, to the Security Service, to the Secret Intelligence Service, or whoever, maybe Army Intelligence. Especially when you talk about the King Cora Boys Home, apparently there were some links to the intelligence services in Ireland there. But I mean, isn't this really maybe about blackmail? So once you've got somebody that's been involved in paedophilia, that you can then basically control them. You can get them to do anything you want, and if they don't, then you threaten them with prosecution.
Well, I had a meeting with a guy who was a senior social worker, and he was the one who actually brought the Elm Guesthouse list to light. He compiled it along with Mary Moss. And this fellow, I sat down with, had a long chat with him one day, and I said, you know, what gets me about the intelligence services? Why do the intelligence services not any sort of information, intel reports or documentation, which will clearly show one of their own or, you know, or those involved high up are paedophiles. Why don't they do what we used to do in the police and burn it, right? I'm not saying I ever did that, but it was a practice that went on. They would burn the paperwork. It was called a midnight barbecue, so there was no trace of it ever, right? And if you throw it away, it could end up on a landfill site or anything. If you burn it, you got nothing. And he said, no, the intelligence services don't do it because for one reason, because it has massive blackmail value.
Wow. So, I mean, I wondered, looking at our current cabinet, for example, there is all sorts of pressure being put on in Britain now to support the genocide in Israel and start what could be eventually a third world war, possibly even a nuclear war with Iran. And it could be that we've got people sitting there making these decisions and actually someone's pointing a gun to their head, John.
Yeah, may well be. The whole thing is dirty. The stakes are high, and you're going to get espionage. And you know, anyone who's ever watched a James Bond film has always seen that it's always been, you know, these sexual decoys that have been used, in, whether it be spying or whatever. I mean, Ian Fleming, the one who actually wrote James Bond, he's an interesting character because he was a naval intelligence officer during the war, and he used prostitutes as his officers, as his covert operatives, and they were one of the most successful covert units in the Second World War. You know, so you've only got to sort of look at someone's weakness and prey on that, and you've got them. You've got them, and especially if they've come from, you know, these residential elite boys' schools such as Eton and Winchester, where the fagging system was well underway, and beatings and buggery were commonplace, you know, amongst the adolescent young boys, you know, under this fagging system. And of course, you start taking part in them practices or having them pushed on you, it's going to cause a lot of physical damage and emotional distress and emotional harm, which you'll carry through into your adult life. And you know, and that's why you will get these cold-hearted leaders that care not for the other side, with lack compassion and empathy, because they've gone through the beatings and the buggery. But it also may mean that they have a propensity as well to do that to others, and that's why you've got these politicians and high-up businessmen that were using the services of rent boys, especially from the meat rack in Piccadilly. And if anyone ever reads Anthony Daly's book Playland, that, you know, that's more than evident in that book.
Now, you mentioned the idea of a prosecution through the National Crime Agency or even a special unit there, an investigation, a proper investigation. Now, this is a relatively recent thing. I have interviewed Anthony Stansfield recently, who was absolutely damning of them, saying that even though they're presented with massive evidence of literally up to £1 trillion in fraud being carried out by, well, it was originally HBOS, which did get prosecuted, and then now apparently it's Lloyds Bank doing this, that forgery of signatures by the bank, this sort of thing. But they're just failing to do anything about it. And so I wonder if this agency is even fit for purpose, a national crime agency. Maybe they are the criminals themselves. We are the crime, you know, rather than actually investigating it.
I know that Anthony Stansfield is the crime commissioner for Thames Valley, I think. Last time. I've been before him and I've relayed all this information to him. You know, so it's not as if he doesn't know about it, hasn't been told. I mean, it's all right doing dealing with sort of like financial chicanery in Hong Kong and places like that, which I think is where he did that inquiry. But let's step this down a little bit. We're talking about little kids from care homes that are being used by the elites for the most sadistic and horrific sexual games and
No, I know, but I
perversions.
mean, Anthony's point was the National Crime Agency is modelled apparently on the FBI, saying it's ineffective, it's totally not fit for purpose. So maybe you can explain the old system, what was around, I suppose, you know, before the National Crime Agency, because that did seem to work from time to time.
It's easy to remedy, and I gave a remedy in my presentation to the ICSA inquiry, right? It's easier to do so. Look, surveillance can be incredibly expensive and time-consuming, and especially dealing with kids, you start looking at having to use child informants and things like that. It gets very dangerous and very messy. But it doesn't need to be that complicated. All you need to do is compel the care home workers. This is where the missing person teams that the police have don't do their job properly, because all they do is push paper about, but when a kid goes missing, they should be debriefing the child. They should be linking in with a care home. So every time a kid goes missing, the care home worker is diligent and goes out and does some very discreet inquiries and gets the registration of the vehicle that picks the child up. That can then be re relayed to, you need proactivity to a proactive fast response unit like I was on, and we go and get that car, the registered keeper, we sit up on it and wait. Now, there's an offence. If you expect that child then to give up this guy who picks her up, who she probably classes as her boyfriend, he's just a Romeo for an organised crime network. But, these are young, vulnerable girls, teenage girls as well. So all you do, you don't need the kids' compliance to do this, because you probably ain't going to get it anyway. There's an offence that says that anyone that picks up a child who's subject to a care order, right, away from their place of residence at an unsocial hour. Now, anything after 9 o'clock is classed as unsocial. You just jump on the guy, right? You jump on the guy, you hit him hard, and because it's what's called an arrestable offence, it's not just an offence, it's an arrestable offence. It gives you the power to detain and to seize and to search. So from that, you can then search the vehicle, seize his phone, and then go round and search his home as well. And on there, you are going to find an audit trail. And it'll be in the form of a text message between that guy and the young girl. And that's it. Case complete. Right? You've got it. You've got it in a nutshell. And then from there, you get that guy who's usually, when I dealt with it, was an asylum seeker, right? And then from there, you link in with the Home Office, everyone else, you try and get a revocation order against their status, definitely get them remanded in custody, and then put pressure on them to start grassing those higher up, which they near enough all used to do. And it's done, it is quick and easy to do, it's very cost effective, and it's incredibly effective. I gave them all this, how to work it, but it needs proactivity. And did they do it? No. And in fact, when I gave that presentation to a group of outreach workers, agent charity workers from two of the main kids' charities, from their safeguarding team, and many other NGOs, I was then stopped and reported to a senior officer classed as treading on toes for proactive operations that were always already in place, which was a lie because they weren't. And I was then shut down from dealing what I was dealing with, and no one else bothered to do it. And these kids continued to be pimped out.
Yeah.
So you don't. You're right. You don't need. See, this is the problem people have, right? And they're obsessed with rank, right? Now, Anthony Stansfield was. I'm not knocking him at all. He was a retired high-ranking British Army officer, And he's got himself this very high convoluted job with the crime commissioner. But it matters not a jot who he knows, what commissioners he knows, what chief constable he knows. If they do sod all, he might as well know nothing. You know, you need hard working, tough street coppers like I was, a little squad of them that are prepared to go out there in all weathers and all times and absolutely batter the daylights out of those pimping up the girls. And it's a start. And it will stop it. And from there, you absolutely hammer them and bully them, right? And the law allows for this, into giving information about those higher up the organised criminal network. And it's so doable, right? You don't need to go all the national and all this and all that. You keep it. There's an acronym, KISS. Keep it simple, stupid, right? And it's so true.
Well, look, you drop in a little bit of a bombshell there, accusing, what did you say? I think you said asylum seekers or migrants or something as some of the people who get into this.
It wasn't an accusation. What we're saying was that those I dealt with that were pimping the kids out from the care home were the ones I got on the proactive job were Kosovan and Albanian asylum seekers. A group that I dealt with for the child prostitution case in London, that was run by a woman, an English woman who was a prostitute, and a Jamaican guy. They were running that. So it varied according to the crime and to what part of London you was in. But the ones picking up the girls from the care home were young lads, mainly of Kosovan and Albanian nationality, and each one of them was an asylum seeker. But the case in central London in Paddington was done by a white British, well, she was sort of Anglo-Irish heritage.
I mean, what this does, John, is it raises the whole issue of, well, if it's difficult to recruit people who, you know, in London to do this, who live and maybe even were born in London but have got a job in London, it may be that that people are being shipped into London specifically, told to claim asylum, and then immediately get a job in organised crime.
Well, I mean, it's always happened. I mean, we had the same, didn't we? We had, you know, the Costa del crime in Spain, where, you know, Puerto Banús and areas like that, you know, there was a high concentration of British gangsters that went out there. And then you've got the Cayman Islands, where you've got those involved in fraud and white collar crime tend to accumulate. So, you know, we do the same. It's, I suppose it's the history of criminality. But, you know, we just don't know. The Police National Computer Index, it covers UK citizens. So if we're getting, as we did in 2024, 40,000 a man coming over on the boats on a migrant, well, do we know their criminal history? I don't know. Do we? I don't think so. We don't know who's coming in and for what reason. You know, you look at Ellis Island in New York. There were lots that went out there for a better life, but there was organised criminality, especially amongst the Sicilian, the Irish and the Italian migrants.
Well,
you
it
know?
Just sounds to me like organised crime is 10 steps ahead of the Met.
Well, the Met's doing nothing. The border force are doing much. See, what you've got to look at, Tony, it's really interesting. You know, we're an island and we're governed by deep water. We've got deep water ports, which makes us, you know, very good in respect to trade and commerce. And you know, there's a lot of countries don't have the deep water ports and the trade winds that this country's got. And we've got the busiest shipping lane in the world, in the channel, you know, and it's a deep trench as well. So crossing it can be quite treacherous, but it's a major, major obstacle. And logistically, it's very, very difficult. So a boat gets put in and it's organised criminality because it'll be run by some sort of gang. I was told it's run by Kurdish mafia run it. This is what I was told by a criminal source. And those that are coming over pay €2,500 to get over here. On July the 13th, June the 13th, last Friday, 14 boats landed on the same beach in Kent, 14, whereas 2 days prior to that, the sea state was so rough, none came, there was zero. The border agency, Dover Control, is one of the most sophisticated in the world. And, it, you know, it, picks up every single vessel, pleasure craft, and all that are floating in the channel at any one time. These boats that traverse across the channel, they go across shipping lanes, and again, the commercial vessels are compelled not only to report these boats, but also to assist if a boat is in trouble without endangering their own cargo. The RYA, the Royal Yacht Association, has done the same. They're now retraining all their license holders in how to go to the assistance of a boat. And the law's been changed that anyone who doesn't get convicted of helping. So the boats then come up. So border control are told they know exactly who's coming and how many are coming. And the French authorities also let them know. But to come onto the shores of the United Kingdom a little while back was classed as illegal entry. Now, the border force was formulated, and what and same with the RNLI and now the Royal Yacht Association, and they've been told to escort these boats in. But the moment you do that, it commutes the offence of illegal entry to an arrival. And that might just sound like semantics, but it's not. It has major, major sort of legal connotations. So the boats that came over, it's a 40,000 came in 2024, right? And they came as arrivals. And therefore, Rishi Sunak promised that they would be processed, sent home, or sent to a third world safe country, which the government elected as Rwanda, within weeks. Out of the 40,000 that came over here, only 21 have been deported to date. And that's a year ago. So it's all a lie. And also, when they come over, instead of them standing trial for an illegal entry and going before the magistrates and then before the Crown Court, if they argue it, they're not, because they're classed as an arrival. They don't go through all that legal rigmarole. They're just processed and then housed and seen by a doctor if they need one.
Well, it
So
sounds
it.
very nice for if you're an organised crime boss, you've got a whole load of people who no one knows anything about on the police
Yeah.
national computer who will be your willing servants, or at least some of them will. Anyway, look, finally, John, if you were in Baroness Louise Casey's shoes, maybe that's a bit too much to ask, but if you had her ear right now, what would you be advising her to do?
Well, I would be saying, telling her to keep it simple, and look at actually, those that are behind it, deal with the actual criminality, but also not those that actually did the actual grooming and then the raping of the children, but those that allowed it and facilitated it, and those that failed to prosecute it. So I'll be looking at all the disclosable material in relation to intelligence that came forward naming these suspects. And I want to know why these police forces, if they knew about them, were not arresting them. Right. And I would take it to a malfeasance level. I wouldn't just localize it and pick the low-hanging fruit. I'll be looking at those who allowed this to happen. And that includes local authority and police officers.
Well, you know what? It also includes Home Office civil servants.
Of course. Of course it does. Of course, And I'll be interviewing officers that supplied information about this and also sources of information, and going and compelling them and saying, who did you tell? And what did you tell them? And then if they kept telling the same police department did nothing, then and that person is put in, like happened with me, I was threatened with the loss of my home, my job, my children, if I ever spoke out about what was going on with these kids and who was doing it. Right, and I was told that this would F the reputation of the Met Police, past, present, and future. So they were putting a reputational status of the organisation before that of child welfare.
Well, do you know what? I think personally that if those prosecutions had gone ahead, it would have done an amazing amount for the reputation of the Met, which is a pretty low state, actually. Now, look, whereabouts is a good place, do you think, John, for people to follow if they're interested in following this inquiry, or if they know someone, one of their loved ones involved or whatever, that they can get involved with that? Where's a good place to follow this inquiry?
I'm not sure what the public sort of forum is where people can follow what's going on. There were certain journalists, especially Xaro, under the last ICSA
Oh,
inquiry that
that's
worked.
right. Yes, that's right. They were
That would
brilliant. Mark Watts, for example,
Mark
was doing
Watts,
a
yeah.
fantastic job. But anyway, are there any groups around? I know Maggie Oliver is doing stuff too, that might be able to signpost people to contribute to this inquiry.
I really don't know. I mean, as of yet, I've not been instructed as to what my role is or how it's needed, and all that. But they do updates as it happens. I mean, it's new. It could go on for years and years and years. But I don't even know if Xaro's still going. But yeah, the journalist Mark Watts, he's very, very proactive and on the ball when it comes to these sort of things. If he's
Well,
going to come out
let's
of
hope there's a bit of a resurgence by Mark. I'll try and give him a
Yeah.
call, John. All right. Anyway, look, John Wedger, former detective in the Met, investigating child prostitution, which is now apparently, yeah, maybe you could finally say something about why has child prostitution become grooming gangs? Why has the
I know.
terminology changed?
I know. And again, look, this is bigger. This is bigger than Kashmiri Pakistan is. And I think that the more that they put the emphasis on that, the more we miss the real big picture. This is going on across the board, right? This is going on with every nationality, every religion. The reason that they're probably pinning it on that, there's probably a lot of local authority politics going on and everything else. And that needs to be looking at. But yeah, you're right. Let's call it what it is. It's prostitution. It's a pimping out of kids. It's child abuse, and anyone who has sex with that kid under the age of 16, it's rape. It's rape. And call it what it is. These are monsters that have done this. And we need to put the blame where it deserves. It needs to go where it deserves. We tend to blame the system and everything else. We've got to blame the ones that are doing it. And the other thing that the government does, there are things like Say No campaigns, right? Where they will tell a child that it's all right to say no. Well, that's appalling, because we're putting the onus on the child. It's not for a child to say no, it's for an adult not to do it.
Yeah,
You
and
know, and
anyone
let's
that does to go straight to jail without
yeah,
passing go. All
that's
right.
right.
All right, John Wedger, thanks ever so much for joining us again.
God bless.
Thank you, John. God bless you too, man.